Would you like to create and enjoy deeper, more meaningful relationships within your family? Welcome to Divine Parenting with Julie Hatch. Julie is an author, speaker, and family mentor and advocate who loves to help create more connection for parents and their children. She understands the woven tapestry of personalities that each unique family is made of and helps parents in creating happy, healthy, and harmonious homes. To connect with Julie, visit calendly.com/Julie-connector. And now, here's your host, Julie Hatch.
Welcome. I'm really glad that you are here today to either tuning in live or listening to the podcast. I am going to be talking about caring for elderly parents. Not only will I be talking from the standpoint of being the caregiver, but also being the recipient of the care. And before I get started, I would like to invite you to call into my show by calling area code 657-383-0553. Press 1 to connect with me. I will open the lines 15 minutes after, so 12:15 Mountain Standard Time, or excuse me, Mountain Daylight Time. So today is a gorgeous day. We've had the most amazing weather, seriously. It's just been awesome. And as I've been giving thought to what I wanted to share today, there's so many things that came to my mind, and especially as my own parents are beginning the aging process and showing signs of really not being as fully aware as they used to be. We'll put it that way. But we all go through this, right? We were born into this world, and at some point we begin that aging process, and then our bodies give out and sometimes don't serve us quite in the same capacity that they used to, and that includes our minds. So before I share with you some of my personal experiences, I wanted to just offer some suggestions for those of you who do have parents who are aging and need additional care, because this can be a very scary and confusing time. It's scary to watch our roles reverse as we step into parenting our own parents in a way. And sometimes we may be left not even knowing where to begin. Where do we begin to even consider what to do? And what are those appropriate measures that we need to take? So before you, if you're like me, sometimes you can jump in with both feet before you have really considered or thoroughly thought out all of the pros and cons. So the first thing I'd have you do is just think carefully before quitting your job to free up time to care for your parent. there's already a stress that goes along with caregiving. And sometimes if you are not really in that position to quit your job, it can just add to that stress. So you want to be really careful. The second thing I would suggest is explore free or low-cost public benefits. So I'm going to just give you some resources. There's a government page you can go to. It's www.eldercare.gov. And then there's another one, the National Council on Aging, and this has a benefits checklist. You can also go to the National Association of Area Agencies on Aging, which gives you extensive information on caregiving help and also has an online locator for help. So these are just some resources that I want to put out there. You also want to learn about Medicare and Medicaid. So I believe that it's Medicare that does not cover any costs for assisted living. But you definitely want to look into those, get familiar with them, and understand what the pros or cons are relating to that. The fourth suggestion I have is that if you decide to care for your parent, you need to understand the cost of keeping your parent in a home. So by cost, I'm not just talking financial. I'm talking about emotional. I'm talking about physical. All of those things, as a caregiver, you need to understand what those costs are before you commit to that. Number five, I would suggest that you consider professional help. For instance, you can check out the National Association of Professional Geriatric Care Managers, and this explains the professional standards and services that they that are offered. You want to watch out for financial scams, and you also want to have the conversation. By this I mean, you want to know the ins and outs of the power of attorney, living will, or healthcare proxy. So this can be uncomfortable, and I realize that, but having this conversation is crucial. So make sure that you have that information. And then also, as you are caring for your parents, it's important for you to consider your own livelihood and life maintenance. So like you would want to consider things like your own retirement plan. You would want to consider things relating to your own care. So these are just some suggestions that I want to put out there that I hope will help you, especially if you're at the beginning of this process and finding care for your aging parents or your elderly parents. I want to talk a little bit about the emotions that sometimes surface as we go through this process of role reversal and caring for our parents. A lot of times, what we experience is really no different than sometimes what we experience as if we're grieving for the loss of a loved one. Our parents often don't have the same capability of being independent, so they are dependent upon us. And the hardest part about that is that they're not children. They're full-on adults, and there's a fine line sometimes. It's hard to know where the boundaries are. And one thing that I would recommend is to find out what the desires of your parent or parents are. Find out what they desire, because a lot of times we make assumptions based on what we think would be best for them. And yes, there is a need for that. Pardon me. Yes, there is a need for that. But you also need to consider their feelings as well. And especially if they're still in a position where they may have some of their mental capabilities and capacities, you want to honor that. And so the sooner that you can have that kind of conversation, the better. I would just like to point out, you know, I did a podcast or a show about grief, and what we discovered is that the stages of grief are actually a myth, and that your feelings can really be all over that emotional spectrum there. They can be, you can feel depressed, you can feel anger, you can feel all sorts of things, betrayal, and they may or may not cycle around. Maybe some of them will cycle around, but there's not really a set way that we grieve. There really isn't. And sometimes as we are taking care of our parents, we look at them and we go, you know, I don't even recognize them anymore. They aren't the parents that they used to be. And so the parents that we were used to, that's the part that we may sometimes be grieving. Maybe we miss our parents being independent. Maybe we miss our parents having the mental capacities in place where they could understand who we are and what we're doing. And there's so many elderly that have dementia or Alzheimer's, and so that can be a very painful experience to go through. And Yeah, you just want to, I just want to acknowledge and validate that your feelings might be a little all over the place as you navigate through this process. You know, one thing that I love, I found this little ditty on the internet, and I'm just going to reference it for you. It's, you can find it at www.aplaceformom.com. And in there, I found the Caregiver Bill of Rights. Oh, how I love, love, love this. And I just want to share it with you. And I'll paraphrase some of it. It says, I have the right to take care of myself. This is not selfishness. This will give you the capability of taking better care of your parent, okay? I have the right to seek help from others. Sometimes we think that all of this is on us, it's on our shoulders, and we feel like we can't ask for help. But I would say you have that right to ask for help and to recognize the limits of your own endurance and strength. I have the right to maintain facets of my own life that do not include the person I care for, just as if he or she were healthy. Okay, this is important. How many of us, when we're caring for others, especially our parents, create that space to maintain our own life? That is so, so important, and I can't stress it enough. Another one, I have the right to get angry, be depressed, and express other difficult feelings occasionally. The only thing that I would say about this is that you can express it so that you're heard, or you can express it so that you're understood, and you can decide. Maybe it's both, but there is a way to be able to express our heavy emotions without it creating a confrontation. And really, it just is all about owning how you feel instead of deflecting that or projecting it onto someone else. Own how you feel. Okay. I talk about that actually, and I'm in the middle of writing an ebook about, it's a guide for effective communication, and I share some of the trigger words out there that creates confrontation so that you can eliminate them and speak in a way that you're not only heard but understood. So I'm so excited about that. But I'm in the process of writing that as I speak. So be looking for that. Okay, I have the right to reject any attempts by others to manipulate me through guilt or depression. I have the right to receive consideration, affection, forgiveness, and acceptance for what I do. And you just want to make sure that that's reciprocal. I have the right to protect my individuality and my right to make a life for myself that will sustain me in the time when my parents no longer need my full-time help. I have the right to expect and demand that as new strides are made in finding resources to aid physically and mentally and mentally impaired people in our country, similar strides will be made towards aiding and supporting caregivers. So this was adapted from the book Caregiving, Helping an Aging Loved One by Joe Horn, published in 1985 by the American Association of Retired Persons. And I just love it. I think it is so, so important, so valid. Caregivers, you know, we don't often stop and think because we're so often in survival mode and just getting the things that we need done now. And we don't really have that time unless we take it to sit and really reflect and think about all the different areas relating to caring for your elderly or ailing parents. One thing that is also really important You know, when it so the reason, let me get back to this before I share that. So the reason that I really love the Bill of Rights is because it helps you understand where to place the boundaries in your relationship with the person you're caring for. And so I think that that is just very important. I think that's one of the biggest things that people get caught up in is that we don't understand where to put those boundaries when we're caring for our parents. And so I'm hoping that by sharing that, that it will help you understand where you can place those boundaries. Now, talking about the recipient of care, okay, our parents, it is important to understand what they're experiencing on their end as well, because it helps us feel more tolerant and patient with them. And so just some things that I want to express, you know, when you are placing a parent in assisted living or you're lining up care for them, or maybe you're the one that's going to be caring for them full time, whatever that situation is, you need to remember that our parents are also feeling fearful and confused often. And they may look at this next phase in their life as a death sentence. Oh, this is that time where I just get to crumple up and die. And they may be going through depression. They may have some anxiety. They may feel trepidatious or resistant to this idea of needing help or needing care. You know, a lot of times they're own identity is sometimes, I don't want to say compromised, but I want you to consider what it would feel like to have a perfect stranger or even your child bathing you or taking you to the bathroom. It can be very humiliating and humbling, embarrassing. And so, you know, all of these things, I'm sure they run through these thoughts and these feelings, and some of them, especially those who maybe have dementia or Alzheimer's, they may be in waves of being coherent and not coherent, and when they're coherent, this may be confusing. This may be a confusing time for them. So it's really important for us to remember that so that we can be more tolerant and more patient with them. They may become ornery, they may become bitter, and we need to remember that they're telling us their story of pain when they do express things in a way that may seem rough around the edges or rude or hurtful. It's not about you as much as it is they are sharing their story of pain with you. And so we need to, I think to a degree, we need to remember that so that we can kind of prepare for that, prepare for that time when they may say something belligerent or rude or off-colored or whatever that is, that we can understand that they are telling us their story. That's what they're doing. That it's really not so much about you, the caregiver. Is more, I think it's more about where they're coming from and what they're experiencing and not really understanding how to cope with that or how to deal with that. You know, anytime we care for our parents, it's hard on everyone involved, everyone. It's hard on the caregiver and it's hard on the recipient of the care, right? And so that compassion needs to be in place, and oftentimes our parents may not be in a place to offer that to us, but we still need to try and be in a place where we can offer that to them. Having said that, it's perfectly acceptable, as I said before, to experience and express your heavy emotions and feelings and give yourself an outlet. Is so important to have support in place for this reason. It's what helps us keep our sanity intact, right? So But getting back to our recipient, the recipient, our parents that we're caring for, I think that it's really important. The two biggest things, I think, as I summarize this, is know what their desires are. And then the second thing is understand, try to understand what they may be feeling and what they're going through. Not at the cost of you, but you still want to have that awareness because that will serve you. Story that I'll share with you, I might have shared it, I think I touched on it before, but I'll share a little bit more as I'm wrapping this up. I was raised with a grandmother who was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And my mother became her caretaker, her full-time caretaker. My grandmother, she didn't always show these symptoms. I mean, I remember her when she could still drive, when she could still walk, and then it gradually got to the point where she couldn't. She couldn't walk. She couldn't stand. She couldn't. She had, I think, the use of one arm, and even then it was sometimes, and the other one really didn't cooperate at all. But we watched her succumb to this diagnosis, and that was very hard, especially on my mother and her siblings, because it wasn't expected, and they didn't know what to expect. There's a lot more awareness about multiple sclerosis these days than back then, but it was a very scary time. And I remember my mother driving around with her sometimes as she would check out some of the convalescent hospitals or convalescent homes and or assisted living places. She looked far and wide because she wanted the best care for my grandmother. And she didn't take that lightly. I know that she spoke with her siblings, and her other siblings were out of state. So it was kind of left up to my mother at the time to care for my grandmother. And during that time, my mother had 4 children, all under the age of 6. She was highly involved and dedicated to church activities. And at one time, she ended up going back to work herself. So how she managed to do all of that is beyond me. But there were days, you know, my mother very seldom ever complained. I don't really remember her complaining. I remember her crying from time to time and reassuring me that she felt sad. But she didn't really complain a whole lot. I think she just accepted that this is what needed to happen. What was the case, right? This is something she knew she had to deal with, and that nothing could really change that. And so my mother would go, first she hired people. I mean, she didn't want to put my grandmother in a convalescent home right away because my grandmother was sharp as a tack, very intelligent, had all of her mental faculties. And so my mother that she placed her in a convalescent home. In fact, she found an apartment that was about a block away from where we lived, and she would run over there every day, just about every day, to take care of the little things, whether it was dishes or food or pick up laundry or take things to the post office or whatever, run her errands, get her out of the apartment, take her to a restaurant or a store. My mother was there at her beck and call, and at the age of, I think it was age 10, for some reason I'm thinking age 10, but it might have been even younger than that. At the age of 10, my mother trained me how to care for my grandmother so that I could relieve her on the weekends so that she could tend to our family. And I looked forward to those times because I was raised in a family of six kids. So I looked forward to that time. And getting to bond with my grandmother, we played games, or she had an old radio that we would listen to radio shows on. And, you know, occasionally she'd have TV on, but she wasn't a very big fan of TV. She would read. I would read. I would curl up and nap, or I'd bring things over to keep me preoccupied. But this experience, I'm so grateful for, because I learned not to fear those who are different, who may appear differently than me. A lot of times children, when they see kids with prosthetics or a wheelchair or some type of, you know, sophisticated whatever equipment, children sometimes fear that because it's different. It's the unknown. They're not familiar to it. But I didn't have that growing up, because I experienced that with my grandmother, and I learned very quickly that she's still who she is. Whether she had a wheelchair or a crutch or whatever, she was still my grandmother. And I learned how to look beyond that and see beyond that and understand beyond that. I also learned a lot about my grandmother during that time. I learned that she and my grandfather would go and do the jitterbug. She was very active. She played the piano. She sewed her own clothes. She lived life fully. She embraced it. And I can only imagine how hard it was for her to be dealing with these limitations that she didn't have in her earlier years. And so I saw a person underneath the exterior of a woman who could no longer care for herself. I still saw this beautiful, amazing woman. And I was really able to appreciate her. I know that it was embarrassing for her when I'd have to get her up on a hoist and take her to the bathroom or help her when she needed help. And I can only imagine how hard that would have been when my mother had hired help for her. At one point, she had hired people to go over and help because my mother simply couldn't do it. And that didn't last very long. The help didn't last very long, so my mom was right back to caring for her. But my grandmother, you know, it was hard for her. A lot of times she was bitter. A lot of times she would cry. Sometimes she would snap, get snappy. But we all understood. I don't want to say we understood, but we certainly... We weren't surprised. We weren't surprised by her response or her reaction. I think if I had been in her shoes, I might have responded the same way. And I think we all knew that. But I did learn a lot through this process. And my mother often felt guilty when she had those moments where she was exhausted and she took the time to relax. She felt guilty. She always felt like she needed to be doing something because that's what she became familiar with. And she did all the banking and everything, and I think she even felt guilty when Grandma did pass finally, because there was no one to care for, and she actually felt relieved. She felt sad, but she also felt relieved. And I think she felt happy for my grandmother because she knew that Grandmother was no longer suffering from her diagnosis. So this was something I learned early on and became very sensitive to early on. And, you know, I think that that process looks different for everybody. And there's probably, I'm sure, lots of similarities. But just remember and just know that whatever this process looks like for you and your parents, that there will come a time when that won't be the case anymore. So use this time as best as you can to make the most of it. You know, try not to allow this time to get away from you, where it becomes all about the care for your parent and less about building memories and spending those last moments of life with them, because time is fleeting and there's going to come a time when that may not be the case. And whatever way you feel when that time arrives is justified, it's valid. So I hope that this show reaches the people who need it and are looking for it. I really hope it brings comfort, maybe some clarity, and just that you understand you're not alone in this. If you would like to connect with me, I invite you to do so by going to www.calendly, it's calendly.com/Julie-connector, or you can email me at julie.connector@gmail.com. I also want to invite you to check out my parenting support groups on Facebook. There's a parenting support group for parents of younger age children that's called Wholehearted Parenting for Kids. And then there's ones for parents of teenagers and tweenagers that's called Wholehearted Parenting. And it's Wholehearted Parenting for Teens. So check those out. I invite you to also gain some support through those support groups. And thank you for tuning in. I'm looking forward to our show next Monday. Our show is every Monday at noon Mountain Time. If you have anything that you would like you'd like me to talk about, or any topics you would want us to cover, let me know. And I just hope that you enjoy today. Go make the most of it. Love on your family members and your friends, and we'll see ya, or talk to you next Monday. So thank you.